uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Friday to you. It's not a happy Friday for the people in Louisiana. Welcome to our program. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Broadcasting live on stations from coast to coast. On Sirius Satellite Radio. On CRN Digital. On RadioPower.org. On WhiteRoseSociety.org. And podcasting on Apple's iTunes. Welcome back to our program. It's the end of the week, the last day of the week, and the day that the first hour of our three-hour program is dedicated to conversations with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, independent member of the House of Representatives in the history of that body. His website's bernie.house.gov or bernie.org. Bernie.org. Our telephone number, if you'd like to speak with Congressman Sanders, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, just go to TomHartman.com and click the live chat button. Bernie, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it is, wherever you are.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here. What's New Orleans? I understand Congress is coming back into session today to try and do something about this?
Yeah, Congress is going to put $10.5 billion into emergency preparations and help for the people of New Orleans. I have the strong feeling that more money is going to be coming later on, but this is a quick $10.5 billion fix to try to deal with some of the very pressing and immediate needs that Louisiana and Alabama and the Mississippi are facing right now.
Bernie, we've seen the slowness of the response of the Bush administration to this thing. Does any of that have to do with money not being allocated?
No, I don't think so, no. That would not be the case. You know, when you look at these images that we're seeing on television, Tom, it is hard to believe that what you're looking at is the United States of America. You would think that this is some impoverished third world country where people don't have food, where people don't have water. And clearly, the kind of response that we're seeing is totally inadequate, but it is not a question of money. You know, what we're doing now, what Congress is doing now, is making sure that there will be ample short-term money available to deal with all the emergency needs. As I've indicated, more certainly is going to be coming down the pike. But the lack of effective response and what you're seeing on television is not because of a lack of money. So it's because clearly of a lack of planning, inadequate response. We can go on and on, but what's going on is simply not good, not acceptable.
Bernie, I have a question that I've been wanting to ask somebody in our federal government.
I'm the guy he got on the phone, right?
There you go.
You don't have the head of FEMA, so you're asking me.
Yeah. Well, here's the question. If you go to FEMA.gov, the official government website paid for with our tax dollars, yours and mine, FEMA.gov, on the homepage of FEMA.gov, there's a link that says click here or something to this effect. Click here to contribute money to the victims of the hurricane. Okay. You click on that Operation Blessing.
I read about that, and that is just an absolute outrage. Here you have a right-wing extremist who just last week embarrassed the people of the United States of America and the United States government by suggesting that we assassinate the president of Venezuela. And this guy, and there have been a lot of financial allegations raised that this guy, who is himself, as I understand, Tom, worth a huge sum of money, when the recipients of cash, is incomprehensible.
Which raises another and perhaps larger question, Bernie. Under the Clinton administration, Clinton had the idea that government could actually do good in the world. Under the Clinton administration, they hired James Lee Witt to run FEMA, who actually had a background in emergency management. Bush, when he comes in 2001, puts Joe Albaugh in charge of it, a crony of his from Texas who has no background in this. Albaugh brings in Michael Brown, who I believe was the lawyer for the Republican Party of Oklahoma and also has no experience in this. Albaugh announces, Mitch Daniels then in 2001 announces that it's the policy of the administration to try to start privatizing FEMA. Albaugh, 2 years later, 2003, leaves FEMA to start a consulting company to help companies in Iraq who want to do business with the federal government, you know, privatizing Iraq, to help Halliburton and companies like that. He's replaced by the guy now, Michael Brown, who this morning on Good Morning America is essentially saying, oh, we couldn't have anticipated this, when everybody was anticipating this. I mean, what?
Your point is...
I'm getting speechless here. How can you govern if you don't believe in government? I guess that's the question.
That's the good point. And you're seeing it not only in what you've just described, in their attitude toward FEMA, where clearly you need a strong government response, not only to this horror, but to any potential horror. That's what government does. If there's a flood, if there's a tornado, that the only institution that can respond in the kind of way and with the speed that one needs is the government. And to make the government response weaker, or to privatize it, or to put people in charge who don't know emergency response, is clearly an outrage. But you're also seeing that same process in terms of the gas crisis that we're now facing. I know in Vermont, and I'm sure in almost every region of the country, gas prices are now over $3 an hour, $3 per gallon. Home heating oil prices are expected to double for this winter. And the president's attitude, more or less, is don't expect me to do anything to protect working people who are spending a fortune to get to work. Don't expect me as president, as leader of the government, to protect elderly people who can't afford to heat their homes in the wintertime. That's just the market, folks. That's the way it goes. It's supply and demand. Sorry about it. Nothing I can do. I mean, you would expect, I mean, not only in terms of the crisis in Louisiana, but also in a very serious crisis. I mean, you got people whose standard of living is already going down, people who are traveling 100 miles to and from work, who are in real economic trouble. They have a right to expect that their president is going to stand up and say, hey, oil companies, guess what? You're not going to be ripping off the American people. We have a strategy here. We have a plan that we're going to implement to do our best to drive prices down and to make sure that nobody in America goes cold. We're going to double the amount of money for the low-income heating assistance program, LIHEAP. We're going to put more money into weatherization. We're going to move right now on energy conservation, move right now on sustainable energy. We've got a crisis, folks, and we're going to do it. I'm the president of the United States, and I'm going to lead that effort. You would expect that from a president of the United States. And this guy, well, I guess the big news is he got off of his vacation. I guess that's pretty big news.
Well, in fact, on Monday there was that photo of him eating cake with John McCain. This is Monday after the hurricane, and it's let them eat cake.
But it touches on exactly, and there's another thing, which was interesting to me, picking up on your point, Tom. Just the other day, one of the first acts that he does is bring his father and Bill Clinton together to talk about raising money privately. And obviously, all of us support. I'm going to contribute to the Red Cross. Millions of Americans are. It's the right thing to do. But you know what else? Here's a guy who's given hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the richest 1%. There's a guy who is fighting today to eliminate the inheritance tax, which will cost us tens of billions of dollars more. And one of the first things he does is say, not that the government should be moving decisively, but that we need private charity to deal with this. Private charity is fine. But he is the leader of the government, and the government should be moving decisively, not only in the Gulf Coast area, but in protecting working people from huge sums of money coming right out of their paychecks to the oil companies, and we're certainly not seeing that kind of leadership.
Bernie, this is going to have severe economic consequences, certainly in the region, perhaps nationwide, and given the price of gasoline and heating oil and things like that, that's going to have a secondary effect, and it seems like it's going to most hard hit. It's going to hit hardest those people who are the working poor and at the bottom end of the half or the bottom half of the middle class, the people who are just hanging on by their fingernails. What can be done?
Well, several things can be done. But, Tom, I mean, that has already happened when you look at what's going on in New Orleans and in the other states who are affected. There are people there, tens of thousands of people, who could not get out of New Orleans because they didn't have cars. There was no transportation out of there. They're living in the poorest parts of town. And you see very nakedly by that reality what is going on in America today, how many people are desperate. Here is a tragedy. Now, I think the planning was terrible. Those people should have been bussed out of there. There are things that could have been done. But the fact that those people who had the money could get in their cars, maybe get in planes, get away, and the poorest people are sitting there clinging to nothing, holding on for dear life. But your point is absolutely right, that it's not just those people who have immediately been impacted by the flood, but what's going on all over this country. You know, I come from a rural state. State of Vermont is one of the most rural states in America. It is not uncommon, trust me, for people to be traveling 100 miles every day to get to work and come back home. Many of these folks are making 10, 12 bucks an hour. What you're doing is yanking 4%, 5% of their yearly income, if they're making $20,000 a year, which is also not uncommon, right out of their pockets. So people are struggling to keep their heads above water, and what's happening now is much worse. Clearly, we're going to see an inflationary impact. A lot of the goods and services that are related to petroleum are going to see an increase in costs. I'm very worried about home heating oil. So what do we do? Well, we do a number of things. For a start, we look at some leadership, and I intend to be active as soon as, you know, I'm back in Washington on Tuesday, and that is to say we've got a national crisis. And, Mr. President, you may not believe in government doing something to help ordinary people, but some of us do, and we're going to demand that government act. So the immediate thing, some of the easy things that can be done, is not only making sure that we get enough money down to the Gulf Coast to deal with the horrendous crisis that is taking place there, and do everything we can to help those communities rebuild, which is not going to be easy. But the very immediate thing that we do, and I speak as somebody who comes from a state of Vermont, where the weather gets 20 below zero in the wintertime, is we're going to double the amount of money, if I have anything to say about it, for the low-income heating assistance program so nobody in America goes cold this winter when the price of oil is doubled. The second thing, I think, if I were the President of the United States, I would make a call, and I would bring in ExxonMobil, and I bring in Royal Dutch Shell, and I bring in all of these oil companies to say, guess what, guys? You ain't going to be ripping off the American people. We're going to be monitoring you every single day, and if we see you gouging as we expect you already are, yeah, you're going to join your friends from WorldCom and Adelphia and Enron and be spending the next few years with those guys in jail. We got a crisis. You're not going to rip off the American people. The next thing I think we got to do, well, there's a lot we'll talk about when we come back.
Break. Yeah, okay. And just in email got my right wing talking points for the day. These will be the main talking point for the right wingers. Michael Brown, rather, kicked it off yesterday. The head of FEMA on CNN, he said, to those who are stranded to help, those who chose not to evacuate, those who chose not to leave the city, that's going to be their talking point. Thought you'd want to know.
Yep.
20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Good morning, America. How are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
And welcome back. Our best wishes to the city of New Orleans. May it return in all its glory and grandeur. Bernie Sanders with us, Congressman Bernie Sanders, bernie.org or bernie.house.gov. Our telephone number, toll-free across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to speak with Congressman Sanders, Gary in Pennsylvania, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Tuesday, I donated a couple $100 to Red Cross to start out with. Yesterday, I called I'm from Nebraska. I called both my senators and my representative and expressed my anger and disgust at the response of this government and its leadership. I would encourage everybody out there to do the same. What can I do beyond that to hold our elected officials responsible for this mess? I believe the problem is on the top, the leadership, the president needs to have had, and his people need to have an act, but somebody needs to be verifying and certifying that these people below him are doing their job. And what else can we do?
Well, I think, the immediate task right now is to put as much pressure as we can on the Bush administration, and those are the people who run FEMA, to do everything they can to deal with the desperateness in New Orleans. After we resolve this, I think a lot of questions have to be asked. I think we need a strong investigation. I think it gets back to Tom's point of a few minutes ago, is I'm not sure that these guys believe that the function of government is, in fact, to help people. And that is not acceptable, especially when you're dealing with an emergency response.
Yeah. How can you govern if you don't believe in government? We just learned that Dick Cheney is still on vacation in Wyoming. And yesterday, Condoleezza Rice was buying a $2,000 pair of shoes at Ferragamo's on Fifth Avenue in New York. And another shopper confronted her and said, why are you in here buying expensive shoes when people are dying in New Orleans? And she had, this is the story anyway, on the blogosphere. And she had either the Secret Service or the store security escort the woman out of the store.
Well, that speaks for itself. Nothing
yeah.
I can say.
Anyhow, moving along. Ed in New Jersey on the line. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom. I enjoy your show. I especially enjoy the Fridays with Bernie Sanders. And I think he's about the only guy with a plan of action. I've listened to him, and he's a very intelligent man. I think he should run for president and straighten us all out.
I'd vote for him.
I'd campaign for him.
So what's your question, Ed?
I just want to know how come it took so long for everybody to get their act together. I don't understand this. When we had the Somali, that other recent disaster, we had food on the ground in 2 days. Here it's been all this time, and, you know, like, they're still waiting.
The tsunami in Indonesia, you mean?
Yeah. Right. That's right. We went all the way over there. We helped them with the food. They had food within 2 days. Here we are, you know, like in our own country, and there's people dying in the streets here. I don't understand.
It's food, like water, everything. When you watch the television and you look at those images, you cannot believe that this is the United States of America. It's
terrible. Where's the help? These people are crying out for help.
That's right. Well, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that this administration owns up to its responsibility as an administration for all the American people. And it does what has to be done.
Thank you very much, Ed. John in Pittsburgh is on the line. Hey, John.
Hello.
You're live. We've got about 30 seconds here. Quick question.
Hey, Mr. Sanders.
Yes, John.
You need to ask the administration the specific question, why did they reduce the funding on the dike? And because of the you're not cutting funding, the levee actually did not break. The water,
it was over top there. Yeah, the water went over.
Yeah.
And when the water,
well, we'll talk about that as soon as
John. We'll wrap it up right after this
Thank
break.
You,
but John, a good point you raise, and we'll get back to that. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our every Friday brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our telephone number 1-866-889-8894. 29 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail, hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back, my friends. 33 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, the question from the last hour, I'm looking at the October 2004 issue of National Geographic, a whole article about how the Bush administration has changed their policy with regard to wetlands, which were the natural buffer against storm surge for New Orleans in 2003. And that and they say the killer for Louisiana is a Category 3 storm 72 hours before landfall. It becomes Category 4 at 48 hours, Category 5 at 24 hours, and just go through this. They laid out exactly what happened. And, you know, why has the Bush administration cut back funding for these kind of things?
Well, in addition to that, I read that the local newspaper, the Times-Picayune of New Orleans, were quoting people, I think it was a year or 2 years ago, who were saying that the funding for the Army Corps of Engineers work on those levees had been substantially cut. And if my memory is correct, I think these guys in New Orleans were saying, well, it looks like some of that money has gone to Iraq rather than to rebuild our levees.
That's what the local Corps of Engineer guy in New Orleans said. They put a hiring freeze on so that they could send that money to Iraq.
Well, there you go. I mean, and what that touches on, not only of gross irresponsibility, and we're seeing the impact of that today. But let me tell you something. We are neglecting our infrastructure from one end of this country to the other. People are finding it harder and harder to get clean drinking water. We have major problems with bridges, with sewer systems, and we have to address those issues. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, so to speak, you have a president who is now continuing to fight to eliminate, among other things, the inheritance tax. These guys want to privatize Social Security. In every single way, they're moving in the wrong direction. But certainly rebuilding our infrastructure is one of the main areas that Congress and the American people have got to focus on.
Well said. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our number 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Michigan, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes, it's appropriate. I know we're in tragic times, but I wanted to wish both of you a happy Labor Day weekend.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
But, yeah, you know, I was trying to be nonpartisan. I saw Bush give his press conference, and he was touring some of the disaster areas. And then, Tom, I hear the story about Condoleezza Rice, and it kind of makes me think these folks are just so out of touch, you know. But I guess my question to you, Bernie, is, you know, right now, of course, we've been having these escalating gas prices. They went up 17 cents in 8 hours Wednesday here in Grand Rapids, and it's just continuing now. It's 3.39 at the last gas station I saw. And, of course, this is all happening irrespective of the hurricane, and now the hurricane will be used as another excuse, no doubt. And these oil companies, of course, have no heart whatsoever, and I think those of us on the left realize that government is the only thing that protects the common person against the predations of capitalism. And I'm just wondering, Bernie, what is it going to take? I mean, these are, I hate to make it political, but these are all states that voted for Bush, and they're probably pretty angry right now. What is it going to take to motivate this administration to realize that Americans are really more important than Iraqis, for instance?
You know, I think the point, the first point you made is indicating how out of touch these guys are with the real lives of the American people. And I'm not just talking about the desperate situation in New Orleans. I'm talking about ordinary working people who can't afford anymore to get to work, people who have no health insurance, people who are working at jobs that pay them, you know, $5.15 an hour. And they're, you know, Bush is on his ranch. What is it, 1,200-acre ranch?
1,600 acres.
And, you know, Dick Cheney. All these guys literally are millionaires who really don't know what's going on in the real world. They associate with other very wealthy people. The richest people in this country are doing just great, and they're looking around and saying, hey, what's the problem? You know, CEO salaries for the Forbes 500 went up 54% last year. What's anyone worrying about? Everything is great. But I think, to answer Rick, I think the American people really are catching on, and the inadequate response to New Orleans is just one more indication of how ineffective this administration is and how little they care about ordinary people. But what my impression is the American people are catching on, and they're also catching on that you have, I'm going to give you an example. We all remember the Terri Schiavo incident. Well, what the leadership of the Republican Party did at that moment was call a special session of Congress, brought people back. It was an adjournment, brought people back from all over the world to deal with the Terri Schiavo incident.
On an emergency basis?
On an emergency basis. People were having to fly in from all over the world because Congress was on break. And yet here you have a huge energy crisis. What are they doing? What are they doing? And, you know, that just kind of tells you where their priorities are. And I think, you know, people in red states, blue states, increasingly are understanding that these guys are there to represent the wealthy and the powerful and not the needs of the middle class and ordinary people.
Mike in Florida, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to make a quick comment and get some feedback from you on the situation. You know, whether it's the oil prices or the disaster and the hurricane, it all comes back to one thing. And nothing in this country is going to change until our attitude as a society changes. Right now, our arrogance and our hubris has left us think that we can toy with nature without retribution, and that while the rest of the world pays $5 a gallon of gas, we're going to always pay substantially less. And if we increase the CAFE standards, most people would just drive more, creating just as much pollution and result in more crowded highways. My point is our situation won't improve until the upper echelons of leadership in this country improve, and that we understand that humility is not a sin. You know, we pretended 9/11 would change us because of the current leadership. It only made us meaner and less tolerant. And this is going to take years to change.
Well, I think if your point is that we have to respect nature, understand that we have to live with nature, that we are part of nature, you're absolutely right. The idea that we are driving automobiles today that get worse mileage per gallon, despite all of the new technology than was the case 15 or 20 years ago, is beyond comprehension. We know the technology is out there right now to move us in a very significant way away from fossil fuel, oil, gas away from nuclear power and into sustainable energy. And just think for a moment, if we started pouring billions and billions of dollars for the development of transportation systems, mass transit, and sustainable energy, what kind of positive impact we can have on our environment. And that's exactly what we can do, and it's no longer a utopian dream. That technology is there. We can move on it. We should move on it. It will create a lot of decent-paying jobs. Absolutely the right thing to do. We're living, in terms of our transportation and energy mentality, in the wrong century.
Logan in New York City, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to point out that these guys are feudalists, and I think they should be called such. They're maybe call them neo-feudalists, but they really want feudalism. And the second point I wanted to make was, given that all our problems are due to the fact that there has been some illegitimate elections and essentially a coup d'etat has occurred, I really believe that the problem is that the progressives can't decide on a certain standard of voting. So I wish there would be some kind of document like Project for a New Election Century or something that spells out exactly what fraud is and exactly what the right kind of voting is and makes it national and submits it to Congress and passes it. I mean, it's just this is the problem. We have unelected people in there, and they're incompetent.
Thank you, Logan.
Thank you.
I don't know that I – let me get the first point you made is about this administration believing in feudalism. I think what they believe in is a return – and I think Karl Rove has been pretty upfront about it. Was McKinley his favorite president?
Yes, he says he's modeling the Bush presidency on the McKinley presidency.
And let's understand. When McKinley was president, this was an attitude that did not believe that government had a responsibility to protect people, and that translates into today's effort to privatize Social Security and Medicare. You were talking about literally the privatization of our emergency response through FEMA, privatization of public education, the desire to destroy Social Security, which we're seeing now, giving more tax breaks to the very, very wealthy and cutting back on veterans' needs, the needs of ordinary people. That is their mentality. They want to go back to what I would call social Darwinism, not feudalism, and that is that the rich and powerful have it all and everybody else, you know, it's like the divine right of kings. They got it all. And if you don't have a lot of money, hey, forget it. You know, do your best to survive, and we see what happens today, what's happening today of people in that circumstance in New Orleans. In terms of the issue of voting, I think there is widespread concern in this country about touchscreen balloting. Clearly, the federal government and state governments, and we're seeing some movement in that effort, have got to make absolutely certain that if democracy means anything, it means that when you cast your vote, you know that that vote has been accurately counted, and you know that in the event of a close election, there is the capability through a paper trail or whatever to make sure that there is an honest recount. It is a very serious issue.
Joe in Los Angeles, California on the line. Joe, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
And I feel honored to be there. You guys are great, and I love this segment, and I wish I could get you all the time. I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I've called in a couple times before, Tom, and my view of the world is through my radio, and I can tell you across the country that people are outraged. You got people that have voted for George Bush twice that are calling in, and you can hear almost the tears in their voices when they are outraged at him and they would never vote for him again kind of thing. The mood has changed dramatically. Two things. One is they see these guys for what they are. You know, the special Congress thing last year for Terry Schiavo and nothing for this devastating storm. FEMA being cut down to nothing and basically whatever was left over dumped into the Homeland Security. And what do you get out of Chertoff? Well, we never could have imagined. I don't know. I think everybody in this country is tired of hearing that phrase, and it's time to get rid of people that have no imagination.
Okay.
I think Joe said it all, but I can add to it. I think his basic point is right, that a lot of folks, you know, honest people who voted for Bush are beginning now to understand that basically, as you said earlier, Tom said it very well, he does not believe the government should govern, that he doesn't believe that the government should be there to protect ordinary people. And in fact, his whole focus on issue after issue, whether it's energy, and I want everybody to hear this, that while oil company profits are soaring, while we're paying, you know, $3.15 for a gallon of gas, the recently passed energy bill that Bush fought for, that he gloated over when he signed, gave billions of dollars in corporate welfare to the oil companies and the other big energy companies, whether it's the bankruptcy bill, whether it is the prescription drug pharmacy bill, which was written by the pharmaceutical industry. On issue after issue, these guys are tied together like Siamese twins with every large multinational corporation in this country, and in instance after instance, so seen so dramatically today in New Orleans, just don't care terribly much about the needs of ordinary people.
Seth in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom, thanks for letting me on. I appreciate this segment, you know that.
Sure.
I just want to say, you know, is he trying to start a civil war? I mean,
George W. Bush, you mean?
I'm poor, black, and you don't get nothing. I mean, that's it. These are Americans!
Yeah. Okay. Got it. They're Americans.
He said it.
Yeah. Well said, Seth. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Jay in Long Island. Jay,
hey,
you're with Congressman Sanders.
Bernie, as Tom will recall, yesterday I said to him that I think that he's going to be thrown out of office for these results, and Tom kind of dismissed that as, you know, imaginary hope. But I've just heard Rachel Maddow in the last little while say, I think he's going to be thrown out of office. And then I heard a third caller in the last 2 days to a liberal talk show say, I'm so sorry I voted for that man twice. I apologize, and it was a disaster. So do you think perhaps me and Rachel Maddow have something here that this, we're actually going to see something? And how would that play out in terms of who takes his place? Cheney ain't going to solve the problem. It'll just make it worse.
I mean, I don't think he is going to be, you know, my own view.
Well, then we're lost.
No, you're not lost. All right, you live, you know, we bemoan the fact that this country does not have the kind of vibrant democracy that it should have. But you know what? We do have elections. And there is an election coming up in November 2006. And a lot of decent people who are running for office, who want to get elected, who are trying to represent ordinary people. And what we need is a huge grassroots movement from California to Maine where people are getting into the streets. They're knocking on doors. They're making sure that the candidates they're supporting are prepared to stand up for working families rather than billionaires. If we do that, you can have sweeping changes in the Congress. And if you have new leadership in the Congress instead of people like Tom DeLay or Bill Frist, let me tell you something. We can tell this president what he has got to do. And, you know, and that's what I think we should be putting our energy.
Well said. Duffy in California, in Murrieta, California. Hey, Duffy.
Hey, thanks a lot, you guys. All I want to say is I know how messed up our administration is and how they haven't responded to this terrible tragedy, but I myself as an individual, we've donated to the Red Cross, and now we're just trying to figure out what can we do. Can we load up our truck and take clothes to Houston? What can we do?
I don't know that I could give you good advice on that because they need what the problem is down there now is they need an infrastructure to be able to deliver the goods
right.
and services, which I'm not sure. I mean, and if you send stuff down there and you know people are driving down there, you can almost make a bad situation worse. So I think we're just going to have to, the first thing that has to be done is there has to be a infrastructure put together that can effectively deal with the crisis and then be able to deal with the food and the clothing that's coming and make sure it gets to the people in need. I'm not sure that we're there at this moment.
Yeah. So just, you know, continue hanging out with the agencies and pushing government to do what they should have been doing for the last week. Thanks, Stephanie,
right.
for that call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Jerry in North Carolina. Rutherford Tun. Tun. Okay. There you go. Hey, Jerry. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
I don't know how we could fool ourselves into thinking that there's not a huge price we're going to all pay for us going from the largest creditor nation in the world to the largest debtor nation in the world. And I think now the bills are starting to come due because we don't have any money left over for things.
Well, Jerry raises a good point. We have national debt, which is now reaching somewhere around $8 trillion, and you can do the arithmetic. It's everybody divided into the number of people in America, and that's what your debt is, and that's going to be left to our kids and our grandchildren. We have record-breaking deficits, and that just suggests to me that we don't need to give any more tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, but maybe we want to rescind some of those that have already been given.
It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern time, 9 to noon Pacific time. Our phone number, 866-889-8894. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
Yes, democracy's coming to the USA. Welcome back, my friends. 55 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Tom in Charlottesville, Virginia. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hello. Thanks, Tom, for having me on. Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom.
My wife is from Burlington. Her family are your constituents. My fear is this. What if New Orleans is only a foreshadowing of what's to come in this country? What if this is September 2nd? How many weeks have we got left in the hurricane season? What if another Category 5 hits Miami or Norfolk? Where's the private sector that's supposed to take care of everything with capitalism? What are they doing for these people now? And my fear is this. The 08 election, you talked about the 06 election. Okay, so what if this country does descend into martial law? What about the 08 election? Will it happen?
I don't think we want to jump into paranoia. Yeah, I think there's going to be an election in 06, and I think there's going to be an election 08, and coming up with, you know, with ideas that there's not going to be an election is not productive. That ain't going to happen. And what we have got to do is learn some serious lessons from what's going on right now. And I think one of the callers, Tom, said it as well as anything. We can't be arrogant with regard to nature. We have got to address the enormous environmental crises that we face. It is very distressing that people like Bush don't even acknowledge the existence of global warming, as well as many other serious problems. And the other lesson here is that we are a society, a nation, that has to have a government that addresses the problems of all of the people rather than just the very wealthy and the very powerful. And to make that happen, people have got to understand that politics and civics, if you like, is 365 days a year. It's not just 2 weeks before an election. In my view, Bush and his right-wing friends may well represent the richest 1% or 2% of the population. They do not represent the vast majority. And what we have to do is overcome divisions based on religion, based on gender, based on sexual orientation, all of these wedge issues that these Republicans throw out to try to divide up working families in America, and we have got to stand together and say, hey, we're going to have an economy that works for all people. We're not going to let these guys charge us $3.50 for a gallon of gas. We're going to protect the environment. If people become involved, we can do those things.
Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us this week, Bernie.
Good. Talk to you next week, Tom.
Yes, indeed. Bernie Sanders, bernie.house.gov or bernie.org, Congressman Bernie Sanders' websites. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Every week here on the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, Live 365, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and Apple's iTunes. iPodding, as it were. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Let's get some of your thoughts on what's going on here. We've got Condoleezza Rice, let's see, shopping for shoes in New York after going to see Spamalot, the new Monty Python spoof. Laughing, having a great laugh night before last. And then yesterday over at Ferragamo's, buying a $2,000 pair of shoes on Fifth Avenue. On Fifth Avenue. You got Karl Rove down in Texas, hanging out with the anti-Cindy Sheehan protesters and then going on vacation. We've got Dick Cheney in Wyoming, and Vice President Dick Cheney This from Mark Crispin Miller, actually, forwarded this law. It's from the Washington Post. Vice President Cheney, who has spent part of August at his home outside Scenic Jackson, Wyoming, remains there today, although his spokeswoman, Leah Ann McBride, won't call it a vacation, doesn't call it a vacation. "He's working from Wyoming today," McBride told me this morning. "So what's his day like in Jackson? Fly fishing in the Snake River?" He's already had his morning briefings. Beyond that, McBride said she would have to check and get back. When's he coming back? We don't know. So, what's up with the Bush administration? Well, it appears that everybody's on vacation. And George came back, you know, the PR opportunity, George came back, but boy, has this been blown badly. Michael in Sacramento, California on the line. Hey, Michael.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I love your show. I had just read a book that I thought was very interesting, and I thought, if not for anything else, if you could just read the first part of the introduction. It's Paul Krugman's The Great Unraveling.
Yeah, I have the book, and in fact, when it first came out about 2 years ago, we had Paul on this program talking about it.
Right. Well, I mean, the particular part that I'm mentioning that I think a lot of people need to hear is Henry Kissinger's words about the revolutionary force. And I believe after reading that is exactly what is going on in our nation, that we have a revolutionary force that's in power now that never did believe in the legitimacy of our government structure. And they do not believe in government taking care of those who have less than several $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond that, really. They believe in plutocracy rather than democracy. And anything that involves any sort of what they would refer to as a redistribution of wealth, what the rest of us might refer to as enhancing the commons, however you want to call it, anything like that, they just scream socialism, Marxism, freak out, get hysterical, and that's the end of that. Michael?
Well, and they have a loud voice with Fox that drowns out any other discourse.
And millions and millions of dollars with their right-wing think tanks and their very large donors. I mean, it's they are the party of inherited wealth and corporate wealth. And surprise, surprise, they have access to a lot of wealth. So, Michael, good point.
And surprise, they self-perpetuate.
Yeah. Well, they do, even though they're very much the minority. Michael, I got to move along. I appreciate
it. One last thing.
Sure.
Byron Dorgan is going to be doing a windfall tax bill, and just to let people know to call their legislators to support that.
Good.
So that the oil companies can be paying us back.
Windfall profits tax.
While we're being bent over right now.
Great.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Michael. Will in Pittsburgh on the line. Hey, Will, what's up? Will in Pittsburgh? Will is not there. Madeline in Bennington, Vermont. Hey, Madeline.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I have a comment. In observing all the you know, the television programs and so on, there's an agency which I think has not been mentioned enough. They're very low-key, but they do a great job. It's the Salvation Army.
Yes.
I know my husband was in World War II, and, hey, when the boys needed something, they were there. And they're always there in times of disaster, emergency, national, private, you know, home problems. They deserve to get a lot of attention.
Yeah, the Salvation Army is probably the most prominent organization that is at its core, through and through, saturated and soaked, a religious institution that is putting into play the actual instructions of Jesus to take care of those who are needy. You know,
they do it very low-key. Yeah. They don't count their horns.
They
just
they don't.
Are there. And they do a great job, and I just wanted to bring them recognition.
Great. Thank you, Madeline. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Dennis
Bye.
In Louisville, Kentucky on the line. Hey, Dennis.
Hey. My point is that this tragedy that's happened down in Louisiana in the southern part of the country can be used as a stepping point, as a point, a launching pad for, you know, the final assault on the neocons. But by that I mean, you know, if you look at it, the war has been on against civil rights, and it's a continuation. It's 40 years later. It's a continuation of civil rights. And by having all these people, the downtrodden, the fact that 30% of New Orleans' population, over 30%, is below the poverty line, having this on display nationally and worldwide brings attention to it the same way that Martin Luther King got attention when the TV crews. If the TV cameras hadn't been there in the 60s, you know, civil rights movement wouldn't have been as big as it was.
Oh yeah.
And I think this is a perfect opportunity, even though it's a tragedy, it's a perfect opportunity for us to show the difference in how, you know, how a class of people have been left out, how we're basically creating an untouchable class in this country right now with what's going on. And it's increasing, and it's also going to start affecting the mainstream population. But right now, I think it's, you know, it's just hitting the black population, mostly down in New Orleans, but it's also affecting
some and the poor white population as well. I mean, basically anybody who couldn't afford to get out of town in advance.
I actually heard Gary Bowers. I don't know. I think it's Gary Bowers that was on a show this morning saying that you know, they had their opportunities to get out.
Right. That's the right wing. I got that email this morning. The right wing talking point for the day is that the people there chose to be there, and they bear the responsibility for this. The Bush administration doesn't. Dennis, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Mike in Herrin, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, I love your show, man. I just had a funny thought. I was just thinking, you know, the Louisiana Purchase, it's almost like a child who purchased a car that it couldn't take responsibility for. So I thought, maybe we should approach the French and ask for a refund and see if they'd buy it back off of us.
Or if they could take responsibility for it. Well,
yeah.
See, the thing is, the French and most of the rest of the European countries understand that government involves governance. That government is the way that we all get together and take care of the commons collectively. And the Bush administration does not believe in government. The Reagan administration didn't believe in government either. I'd say Bush Sr. probably did, but he was, you know, he was so constrained by the Reich that he, you know, his right flank that he couldn't do much. And so here you have, you know, how can you govern when you don't believe in government? It's very simple and very straightforward. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Richard in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I don't get your show anymore on the radio here, but we do get all Air America stuff. Anyway, I just wanted to say, and I don't hear your show, so I'm sure you're talking about this, but I happen to just see what Fox News was doing with all this, and the whole thing's about looting and law breaking and all that, and all the other news media seem to be about relief and food and water.
That's right. Fox is going to do everything they can. Fox is going to do everything they can to vilify African Americans in Louisiana. I mean, that's what it's going to be all about. The right wing talking points are right there, right in front of you. And so, you know, well, anyhow, it's the end of the week, and we always try to look at something, you know, where you think you knew what you knew, and you thought you knew what you didn't know, and you thought you knew what you didn't know, but maybe you didn't know what you didn't know. Maybe even everything you know is wrong.
Know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync, and think that you're out of your mind. Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be? Is it possible that many of these problems have to do with the sexual insecurity of men? Stephen Ducat, is it Ducat?
Ducat.
Ducat, thank you. Stephen Ducat is with us. He's the author of The Wimp Factor, Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity. Hey, Stephen, how does anxious masculinity play into the disaster we're seeing play out in New Orleans?
I think it plays a very central role, but let me say for just a second what I mean by anxious masculinity.
Sure.
What I look at in my book is how conservative men's terror of the feminine, what I call femophobia, affects their politics as well as their personal life. And this femophobia is really the foundation of patriarchal masculinity, and it gets played out in a lot of ways politically. And, you know, when we look at this disaster, it's talked about as a natural disaster, but that phrase really belies the human hand at work, both in increasing the magnitude of the hurricane, in maximizing its damage, and in the failure to respond adequately. And that human hand, of course, consists of a variety of conservative policies and the economics and psychology behind those policies. And what very few people have talked about, what I address in my book, is the psychology behind these policies. For example, one of the key findings in my own research was that conservative men tend to be very aversive, if not phobic, about the caretaking functions of government.
This would be the feminine side of the human race, basically,
exactly.
The caretaking functions.
What they call the nanny state.
Right.
They're quite happy to support the daddy state. And
the police, the military.
The police, the military. And in fact, conservatives will even oppose the military if the military is used for purposes of protection. This has happened in a variety of humanitarian interventions around the world, which is why, for example, the right wing opposed Clinton's efforts to rescue the Serbs, why it took so long, the Bosnians in the 90s. But you see this played out even now. I mean, the Bush administration preferred to send $70 million needed for levee repair and a third of the New Orleans National Guard, of course, along with our high-water vehicles and generators, to Iraq, rather than really protect the homeland from a genuine threat that they had been warned about, you know, years ago.
Is this Stephen Ducat?
Yes.
Stephen Ducat. First of all, is there a website where people can learn more about your book, The Wimp Factor?
They can go to beacon.org, which is the publisher.
Okay, great.
I'm in the process of creating a website for myself.
Okay, great.
But they can also email me at sjducat@yahoo.com.
Okay.
But they can also go to Amazon where they can get information on the book.
Stephen, is this the result of, like, bad toilet training, or is it some sort of genetic thing? We have about a half a minute left, by the way.
Well, I think it has to do with a particular version of masculinity. I don't think this is absolutely tied to our genes or our hormones. But in our culture, and this is something that goes all the way back to the Greeks, manhood is defined in terms of domination. And when you define masculinity in terms of domination, invasion, et cetera, that's a very precarious kind of masculinity, because you might be on top today, but you're not going to be on top tomorrow. So there's a kind of insecurity built into the very definition of conventional masculinity.
And that's what's driving the conservative worldview to a large extent.
Absolutely.
Stephen Ducat, the book is The Wimp Factor, Gender Gaps, Holy Wars, and the Politics of Anxious Masculinity. Stephen, thanks for being with us today.
Certainly.
And Ken, keep up the good work, spreading the good word. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Gold Star. Star dads left with nothing but a folded flag. Gold Star brothers, sisters too, feel their pain. It could be you. Support the troops.
Ah, yes, Country Joe, formerly of Country Joe and the Fish. CountryJoe.com is website. Welcome back, my friends. Some New Orleans police officers have resigned. This from Reuters today, just now posted. This from Reuters. Some New Orleans police officers have resigned their jobs as police officers rather than face the violence in the city. It's my understanding, says Whitehorn, State Police Superintendent Colonel H.L. Whitehorn. It's my understanding that those who have resigned said they have lost everything and it's not worth shooting at and losing their lives. He does not know the specific number of police officers who have quit their jobs. It may be that the Louisiana governor has warned that troops will shoot to kill. Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco warned rioters and looters in New Orleans on Thursday that National Guard troops are under her orders to shoot and kill to end the rampant violence in the city in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Boy, a messy, messy situation. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm just looking at Fox News, and they've got the photo ops. Bush is down in Biloxi now. He's got a tiny little crowd of three people. He's got two of them are pretty girls, and one's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy with sunglasses. And Bush has got his arms around the two pretty girls, and he won't let go of them almost. It's been like nonstop hugging with him. And you can just
These are people that have been rescued?
Well, no word. I mean, you could hear a slight amount of conversation. They had the volume down a little low, and And the guy was saying something about he was a supporter. So it sounds like a fixed audience.
Amazing. David, I got to move along.
No trouble. Yes, I wanted to talk about writing off America.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, this discussion about his not funding the levees down there, and the further follow-up is making it plain that they wrote off New Orleans, and they have essentially created a policy of writing off New Orleans for some purpose.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
What other cities have they done this?
Well, I'd say all the other cities. These guys don't believe that government should govern. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. They don't believe in democracy. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom. Yeah, everything you're saying is fascinating. Very briefly, one thing that I'm hearing today, and just a word to the wise, if you're in touch with these folks, is that Cindy Sheehan and her peace protest are coming in for a certain amount of derision. People saying, you know, if she wants to protest anything, if she wants to do something useful now, she should get down to New Orleans rather than doing this peace protest. And I have to say, I believe that is going to resonate around the country. And PR-wise, if she's smart, she will.
Yeah, probably right. Although the reality is that other people's children are dying in Iraq today.
Right.
Hopefully not, but I mean, you know, it seems every
day.
Well,
they are. Yeah. Died yesterday.
Okay, and
so
it's,
I know.
It's not like the bloodshed in Iraq is going away.
No, it's not. It's just it's very interesting. I heard that, and I'm thinking, yes, the right are going to start to do that kind of thing, and we're it's going to be very interesting to see how this is being played, to see how Fox starts to give happy news.
Oh, no, they've already started the divide and conquer on this, Victoria. If you look at all the other news channels, what you see is the humanitarian disaster punctuated by a few crazies. And if you look at Fox News, it's all crazies all the time. In particular, all African-American crazies all the time. That's all Fox News, by and large, is showing. And you've got all the right-wing commentators repeating Chertoff's point or Brown's point or whoever it was yesterday who said these guys chose to be there. These people in New Orleans, they chose to stay there. And, gee, I guess they're just choosing to riot and they're just choosing to loot and whatnot. They're just choosing to starve to death.
Yeah, choosing to be born stillborn, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Victoria, thanks a lot.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one. It is just absolutely tragic what is going on here, and the scope of the tragedy is amplified by the fact that it could have been, much of it could have been prevented. Of course, you can't prevent a hurricane, but you certainly can prevent the consequences of it. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I just saw this article on truthout.org. It's actually written by Kelpie Wilson, who is the environmental editor.
Right.
And it talks about how there were floods that there is scientific evidence there were floods about 6,000 years ago being as bad as what we hear described in the Bible about Noah and the Ark. And it says, and then the last lines of the article are, those flood times put the fear of God into man. And these coming flood times with this hurricane may put us in the fear of Mother Nature, the goddess of the ages.
Okay,
what do you think of that?
Well, you know, whether or not, you know, the whole Noah thing, no, I don't, you know, you're not going to have a flood over the whole entire planet. It just, you know, it's not possible. But, you know,
they weren't saying on that
scale. The Bible is describing some terrible flood. But in terms of, you know, is this Mother Nature's revenge?
They weren't saying whole planet. They were saying just close to the scale.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, no, I, you know, my take on it, Steve, is we have been messing with Mother Nature big time badly, and it's going to bite us in the butt, and it is. And you know, and here we're seeing, you know, the consequence of global warming, more severity in our storms. Very simple. Nancy in Eureka, California, on KGOE. Hey, Nancy, what's up?
Oh, well, I just wanted to point out that the looters down there are just taking advantage of the situation like our politicians and leaders have been doing to the Treasury. They could be called Halliburtons.
Yeah. There you go. It is that mentality, and that's the scary thing about in 2001 when Joe Albaugh was put in charge of FEMA, and he was talking about, and Mitch Daniels was talking about privatizing FEMA. I mean, these guys, how can you govern when you don't believe in government? And that's the big problem with the Bush administration. Nancy, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Tom in Waterbury, Vermont. Is that WBTN? Hey, Tom.
Oh, Tom, yes.
What's up?
Well, I'm apprehensive about giving Red Cross money because they wanted to keep 95%. At 9/11, they wanted to keep 95% of it for administrative costs. Can you tell us, you know, how much of the money is actually going to get to the people that need it?
With regard to the Red Cross, I don't know, but I can tell you that they've cleaned up their act since then considerably. So I think that you can give money to the Red Cross and know that it's going to be well used.
Oh, well, thank you very much. The thing
that flips me out is that if you go to the FEMA website, FEMA.gov, FEMA.gov, and you click on the link to give money to help the victims of the hurricane, you will come to a page where there are three and only three organizations listed, charitable organizations to whom you can give money. And one of those is the Red Cross, which is fine. One of those is a National Food Bank, a great organization. The third one is Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing.
Right.
Believe it or not. I mean, it is absolutely outrageous. Tom, I got to move along. It's Albert in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, listening on WPTT. Hey, Albert, what's up?
Yeah. Tom, hi. I just was calling just to say, you know, that I'm listening to the tragedy and the great outpouring of people wanting to help all the people in Louisiana and Mississippi and everything. But, you know, and I was sitting today talking to a group of guys that got my haircut, and the one guy said the oil companies are making millions of dollars in profit. And, you know, and I haven't heard one leader or one congressman or news channel get on the radio or TV or anything and ask the oil companies, put them on the carpet and say...
Well, Bernie Sanders was just ranting about that an hour ago on this program.
No, but I'm saying, I mean, to ask the oil companies, like, to donate, you know, if
right.
you're going to Louisiana or Mississippi, and, you know, to donate to these organizations.
Yeah, I got it, Albert. I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I got to say what blew my mind was yesterday watching, I think it's Lee Scott is his name, the chairman of Walmart, getting several minutes of national network TV time to talk about the fact that they had given something like $15 million, which is, what, a few minutes worth of revenue for that corporation? Whew, incredible. Sue in the United Kingdom. Hey, Sue, calling from England?
Hi, Tom. Yeah. First of all, condolences to everyone affected by the tragedy from
Thank you.
Here from the UK.
Although it's not affecting us here in Oregon,
yeah.
But it's a terrible, terrible thing. You're right.
Yes, yes. You know, we're watching the TV, the same as you over here, and, you know, wanting to help. But Tony Blair has said that we will help in every way that we can. But the Foreign Office says that help's been refused so far.
You mean the U.S. government has said thanks but no thanks?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I noticed there was a very brief report a few days ago, or yesterday, that the French had offered water purification systems, and I'd heard this morning that the Russians, this was unconfirmed, had offered 100,000 immediate portable housing units, and that all of this had been turned down by the Bush administration. Is that all being reported there, Sue?
There's certainly a long list of what's been offered.
I'm curious.
I don't know what's been refused.
I'm curious about the news coverage there on the BBC and on the various channels, Sue, is here in the United States is basically splitting out. Fox News is basically focusing on black rioters, and most of the other news channels are focusing on a humanitarian crisis. And it's almost like you're looking at two different countries or two different cities if you go from one network to another. How is it being played there in Europe?
Well, what I've seen is a bit of both, but more of a humanitarian crisis than of the looting.
Yeah, well, certainly that's the greater reality. Sue, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling us. Matthew Rothschild is with us. It's our Best of the Rest of the News segment here, and Matthew is the editor of the Progressive magazine. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. Great to have you with us here. Progressive magazine, I realize, is not a daily publication, so you're not on top of the news day to day as a publication or as a magazine, you know, publishing that news, but it's all flying by your desk. What do you see as the biggest story of this past week?
Well, Katrina is the huge story, but it's really not Katrina. I think we need to be careful because the hurricane was a natural disaster and it blew through. What we're seeing now is a political disaster, a Bush administration disaster, a calamity in Republican laissez-faire policy, a calamity because Bush took a lot of the National Guard there, 35% from Louisiana and sent them for his, maniacal war in Iraq, and a calamity just in his own lethally tardy response.
Yeah, it is absolutely mind-boggling. If you look back at the chronology of this, January 2001, Bush kicks out the fellow James Lee Witt, who was the director of FEMA under Clinton, who is actually a career guy who understood disasters, who had a background in that, and appoints Joe Albo, a crony from Texas, as head of FEMA, who's got no experience in disaster management. And then 3 months later, Mitch Daniels says they're going to try and privatize FEMA. And Alba in May says they're going to downsize it. And two years later, in 2003, Alba goes on and creates a consulting company to help corporations make money on Iraq.
Right,
contracts. I mean, this is incredible.
And these guys don't believe in government. They don't believe in it, that is, in a government that can help people. They believe in a government to wage war and to help out their corporate cronies, and that's about it. But it's not a surprise that Bush, in his first speech after this happened, called on the armies of compassion. Those are NGOs. That's like the Red Cross, and he mentioned Catholic Charities. He wanted them to handle the problem, or he wants his daddy and Bill Clinton to handle the problem.
Right.
He doesn't think he should handle the problem.
And he's got Pat Robertson's organization, Operation Blessing, as one of the only three charities that you can give money to listed on the FEMA website.
And it was no secret that Bush and the White House said nothing about the Pat Robertson scandal last week.
Yeah.
Because he can't. Pat Robertson and nuts like Pat Robertson and that same nut bowl, those are the only people who support Bush right now. I mean, and then to hear Bush yesterday on the Diane Sawyer show giving his own little Condoleezza Rice moment about no one could have anticipated this happening, which is what she said about 9/11 and terrorists flying planes into buildings. Bush said the same thing about levees not holding back the water. Well, we've been warned six ways to Sunday for years now that those levees down there in New Orleans weren't going to hold for any category over Category 3 hurricane. I mean, I don't know where this guy's been.
Yeah, last October, I mean, even National Geographic did a whole long illustrated story on that very issue. Matthew, let's take a few phone calls and we'll get your take on what our callers have to say, if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Okay, Eileen in Washington Township, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Eileen.
Hi.
Eileen, okay.
I was calling about the comment from Louise in Washington about Cindy Sheehan going to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree that that's a good idea. I think she has to stay on course with getting our troops home. She said this is her one issue, and I think she should stick to that. I don't think that she should be putting, I mean, if she wants to make comments, fine. I mean, they ask her hard questions anyway, harder questions than they ask the president, but I really think that it would be a mistake for her to go off course.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Eileen. What's your take on that, Matthew? Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service was with us at the bottom of the hour, and she said that a lot of folks are advising Cindy Sheehan that she's about to get bushwhacked, that the right wing is going to come up and start clobbering her in the media, particularly Fox News and right-wing talk shows, for obsessing on Iraq when people are dying in New Orleans.
Well, I'm a big admirer of Cindy Sheehan, and I think she really kicked off this anti-war movement. I don't know if it's a wise move or not for her to go down there to New Orleans, and I worry a little bit about a messianic streak that she seems to be exhibiting sometimes. So I would hope that she'd not fall into that trap.
Yeah. Stay on focus.
Yeah.
Stay on focus. I agree with you. Carolyn in Chicago, Illinois on the line. Hey, Carolyn.
Hey. It's Carolyn of MakeThemAccountable.com.
Oh, how cool. MakeThemAccountable.com, one of the great websites out there.
Yes, and I just want you to know, just so that you won't rant and rail against every single oil company, BP, the BP Foundation, has said that it will be donating $1 million to the relief effort.
Well, number one, that's what, 40 seconds of the
I know,
revenue?
It's a teeny tiny
drop
in the bucket.
BP is a British company. It's British Petroleum is what BP stands for.
Well, that's its origin, yeah. I don't know exactly
no,
the ownership
still,
now.
No, it's still a British company.
Well, I mean, the Shell will probably be next.
Yeah, and they're Dutch. Yeah.
They're Dutch.
There you
right.
go.
They're owned by the Queen.
There you go. Okay, Carolyn, thanks for that tip.
Okay, talk
I appreciate
to you later,
it. Good
Tom.
To hear from you. Matthew, your thoughts?
Well, Well, you know, BP, interestingly, is one of the few oil companies that actually recognizes that global warming exists, unlike the Bush administration or ExxonMobil, for that matter. So it doesn't terribly surprise me. I mean, it's just outrageous that these huge oil companies are making money hand over foot because of the disaster down there.
Yeah, and not only that, they just got $14 billion, I think it is, in the energy bill and gifts from us, our tax dollars.
$14 billion when they made $90 billion in profits in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous.
Well, it's the Republican way. Matthew Rothschild, by the way, is with us. Matthew is the editor of the Progressive magazine, progressive.org, online. Rose in Worcester, Vermont, is on the line. Hey, Rose.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm just calling. I spoke with the gentleman that answered the phone, and he gave me some answers already. But just with what's at the top of my mind in the disaster that's going on in Louisiana and with our government's lack of response is just the fact that our National Guard is in Iraq. And I'm just so upset about that, and I'm interested to know how much is that really a reason that we're responding so poorly? Like, is there, how much of a
well,
connection
about
is there?
My understanding is about a third of the New Orleans National Guard is in Iraq right now. Matthew, do you know any more details on that?
Yeah, the number I saw was 35% of the Louisiana Guard was in Iraq, that 6,000 National Guard members from Louisiana and Mississippi were in Iraq. So you can just figure out what it would be if those 6,000 guardsmen and women were able to get down to New Orleans and help those people who were just stranded for more than 72 hours without food and water. I mean, it's just unbelievable. My wife is a pediatric nurse, public health nurse, and she says those babies are going to be dying.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, it's even worse than that. The guard, it's not just that the guard is missing. It's that the guard that is in Iraq took with them almost all of the portable generators, most of the amphibious vehicles so that they could cross the Tigris River and things like that, and many of the Humvees. And so they're lacking equipment down there in Louisiana as well.
Do you think that will be addressed? I mean, obviously.
We just lost Rose.
Well, Rose was making a point there. I think the mainstream media has not emphasized enough the diversion of our resources to Iraq, especially as regards to the National Guard and this tragedy. I mean, the Guard was not trained to go fight a maniacal war in Iraq. It was trained to help out in a disaster like a hurricane, and they're just not there, and people are suffering.
Yeah. Matthew Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, progressive.org, their website. Matthew, what's your expectation of how this is going to play out?
Well, I mean, on the human scale, the sadness is there are going to be, you know, more people dying, and the death toll is going to surpass 1,000, I'm afraid. And I just think it's the magnitude of the human crisis is just overwhelming, and that always has to be our first focus. Politically, I think it's going to leave egg all over Bush's face because he has handled or mishandled this so badly. And I don't see that that's going to help him any. I worry about another thing, what it's going to do to our race relations in this country.
I was just going to say, Matthew, I get the right-wing talking points. You know, I'm signed up as a talk show host on both sides, right? And it seems that the spin that's being put out that probably will be, you know, probably what you're going to hear on Hannity's show this afternoon, for example, is that, number one, the people in New Orleans, by and large, chose to be there. If they were too poor to leave the state or leave the city, they chose to live there in the first place, and knowing that it was below sea level, it's their fault, and they should bear responsibility for it, number one. And number two, most of them are thugs and criminals, and by the way, they're African Americans. And so focus on African Americans, looting, criminals, killers, and they chose to be there. That's the right wing focus for this. And do you think that these cons are going to be successful in spinning this way so that a large number of Americans start thinking, oh, you know, it's a bunch of black people out of control down there in New Orleans?
Well, I do think it is going to feed latent racism among many in the white population, not all, and not maybe a majority, but certainly many. It also is going to enrage the black population of this country that black people are being depicted this way and that they are being blamed in the most racist way by right-wing radio. I had someone send me a hideous email about, you know, thinning the herd and how great that is. You know, it's going to take some really sensible people standing up, like Harry Connick Jr. I saw on the Today Show this morning, saying, look, at the people who are doing this thuggery is a tiny percentage. The rest of these people are really good people, and they should not be blamed for it. This was not their fault. Let's stop blaming the victims.
Yeah, well said. Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, progressive.org. Matthew, thank you for being with us today for our Best of the Rest of the News segment.
My pleasure. Anytime, Tom.
Thank you. Great having you here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire, no RNC pass required.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Third time I've said that. I'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them. You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate. Gave them the old hocus pocus. Yeah, misdirected them.
Oh, yeah, George, you sure did.
With 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And what a brilliant Rovian job it was.
You played them both right to perfection. Despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them. Let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
That Bill Jacobs, BillJacobs.us, by the way, the writer and performer of that music. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
I'm really mad at the fifth-generation inbreeders on the right that try to compare 911 to what's going on right now. You could drive up to Ground Zero in New York, and you're talking over 900 square miles of flooded up to the roof line areas in Orleans and places down there.
Well, there is actually probably one valid comparison between 9/11 and the damage from Hurricane Katrina, and that is that the Bush administration received 56 specific warnings that 9/11 was going to happen. This is the what's on the record in the 9/11 Commission report, including that they were going to be hijacking planes. I mean, they were naming the buildings and things, but that this was going to happen. And the Bush administration had years of warnings that something like Katrina was going to happen, and in both cases they didn't do anything to help.
Exactly, and
or to stop it.
George, this is AWOL George that's missing in action once again.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Tom, thanks
yeah.
a lot. Steve in Waterbury, Vermont. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? I had listened to a talk show the other day, and they had a tractor-trailer driver call and said he had spent an additional $41,000 more for fuel this year than he
Yeah, that was this
year.
Show.
Okay. My point is it would seem to me that one railroad car would equal one tractor trailer, and you could sure pull a heck of a lot of railroad cars around with one engine.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We are going to have to, and it's going to be forced upon us. I mean, it's not even a matter of choice anymore, Steve. We're going to have to come up with more efficient ways of having transportation happen in the United States, and of centralizing our communities in ways that they're more self-sufficient. We've just got to go. In terms of energy production, food production, all that stuff. Thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman program where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Yes, indeed.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. Happy Friday. Happy end of the week. It's not a happy day for America, though. As we are seeing the inevitable consequence, the absolutely predictable consequence of conservative domestic policies. This is just straight out, straightforward. This is the world that Ronald Reagan was talking about when he said so famously, and everybody thought it was so funny, and it got quoted so many times and got played over and over and over again on TV, when he said back in 1979, 1980, when he was running for president, and then repeated many times when he was in president, that the most terrifying sentence, the most terrifying phrase in the English language is, "I'm with the government and I'm here to help." Remember that? Remember what a chuckle that was? The Bushies, the Reaganites, the cons. Those who believe that governance is something that should be left to the corporations and to the elite few. This is the kind of world that they would have us live in. If you've got enough money to get out of town, if you've got enough money to find someplace else to live, cool, you're in good shape. Trent Lott complaining that one of his houses was destroyed. Gee, one of his houses. Multimillionaires, well, you know, one of my houses was destroyed, he says. But if you're poor, if you're being ground up under the wheels of the machine, tough. Compassionate conservatism means compassion for multinational corporations and inherited wealth. And in fact, next Tuesday, when the Senate comes back into session, the first thing on the agenda, if Bill Frist has his way, is going to be ending the Paris Hilton tax, the estate tax, giving Paris Hilton a tax cut. And Bill Gates. And Richard Mellon Scaife. And, you know, the list goes on and on. This is the world that the cons... Here you have Captain Michael Pfeiffer of the New Orleans Police Department. He's talking about how their communication system failed during the storm. Very often people don't even know what's going on from one part of the city to another. People are quitting... Police officers quitting their jobs. People refusing to enforce a shoot-to-kill order. He says, we're in survival mode here. CNN right now reporting... that while just coincidentally with the president showing up, buses and a convoy of vehicles, military vehicles, arriving in New Orleans bringing food, water, and medicine to the folks at the downtown convention center. This is the downtown convention center where, you know, I don't know if this is, it's like, should I deal with this? It's like, how do you handle this when you're on the air? Is this a tragedy or is this a comedy? I mean, clearly there's a tragedy to it. But this is the convention center where there's 15,000 people, more or less. And the head of FEMA didn't even know that they were there. Didn't know they were there. Was told about it by a reporter. Well, now finally it appears that they're getting some help. Good. After the mayor of New Orleans goes on a radio station and says, hey, everybody, get off your butts. Get out there. Do something. Get off your asses is literally what he said. And then he's, you know, pardon my French, but, you know, we're very upset here. The mayor of New Orleans. Here's Ray Nagin. He was on WWL radio Thursday night. And in fact, here's just a very short clip of it, what I think we can play within the boundaries of the fair use doctrine.
They're saying it may be too dangerous for him. Listen to the mayor of New Orleans once again. The mayor.
They told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over an Air Force One does not do it justice. And that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people that were stuck in attics, man. Old ladies, when you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down there. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn...
Yeah, and that he's talking about George Bush getting out there and flying over and looking down, and this is the mayor of New Orleans, and he apologizes for his language. He says, excuse my French, but I'm really upset here. And he is. And I think he's... He has every reason to be. The chronology of this thing is absolutely mind-boggling. This did not start last week. I mean, you have the reality. There is the very simple and tragic reality that while it took George W. Bush 7 minutes when the second plane hit the World Trade Center of staring into space, 7 long minutes before he could move, as he was reading My Pet Goat, it took him 7 days. It was a week ago today that they were predicting that Hurricane Katrina, as it was passing across Florida, would be soon hitting New Orleans. And that given the temperatures of the water in the Gulf, odds were it was going to be at least a Category 3, maybe a Category 4 or Category 5 storm. So it took 7 days for George to get his entourage down to New Orleans. Meanwhile, Condi Rice, having her vacation in New York City, going to see Spam-a-Lot, the new Monty Python comedy, laughing, getting lots of yucks night before last. Yesterday afternoon, going down to the Fifth Avenue shops and shopping in the very finest stores, trying to buy a $2,000 pair of shoes. Woman comes up and says, what are you doing in here when there's people dying in New Orleans? Condi has the security or the Secret Service or whomever throw this woman out of the store. But even that's not really where it began. Where this thing began was in January of 2001. Because January of 2001 was when the Bush administration took power. And the FEMA director under Bill Clinton, James Lee Witt, who is a seasoned professional, understood disasters, responded to them well, and had a crackerjack agency, an organization that really knew what it was doing and how to respond to crisis. When James Lee Witt got fired by George W. Bush and replaced by Joe Albaugh, a crony from Texas, an old political buddy of George W.'s who had absolutely no experience whatsoever in dealing with emergencies. And now he's the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Three months later, Mitch Daniels, the director of the budget director in the Bush administration, says, yeah, one of our goals is to privatize much of FEMA's work. Oh, it works so well in Iraq, you know. Of course, they didn't have Iraq in 2001 to look at and say, gee, you know, was this a success or not? But, you know, they could have predicted it, I suppose. I mean, here in Iraq, we've got Halliburton contractors that we're paying. Halliburton is paying them $150,000 a year. We're paying Halliburton probably $180,000, $190,000 a year because Halliburton gets an automatic profit, remember? $150,000 a year to stand in line and serve food to the troops. $150,000 a year to deliver mail to the troops. Functions that the Army used to provide for itself. Well, let's privatize it. It'll only cost six times as much, but, you know, that money's going to private corporations. That money is going to help build Dick Cheney's fortune. It's just like our public schools. Well, let's privatize the testing. We don't want teachers filling out tests on the Mimeo machine anymore. No, it's got to be big private corporations, $20, $25 tests, mandate, require them. Let's privatize. They're privatizing everything. Enron here in Portland, Oregon. Enron owns our local power company now. So anyhow, in April, Mitch Daniels says we should privatize much of FEMA's work. Let's hand it over to Halliburton. He didn't say Halliburton specifically, but he suggested it should be privatized. A month later, Albaugh, the director of FEMA, confirms this. He says, and I quote, "Many are concerned that federal disaster assistance may have evolved into both an oversized entitlement program." Oh, right. When there's a disaster, we're entitled to support from the government, and that's a bad thing. It's an entitlement. It's a welfare program. If an earthquake hits California, well, they chose to live in California. If a flood hits Louisiana, hits New Orleans, well, they chose to live in New Orleans. What's going to happen when it hits Miami? Well, they'll say they chose to live in Miami. It's a hurricane area. He says, expectations of when the federal government should be involved and the degree of involvement may have ballooned beyond what is an appropriate level. This 4 years ago, George Bush's first head of FEMA. That same year, by coincidence, just coincidence, 2001, one of those terrible bureaucrats, one of those career professionals, one of those people who actually makes a living dealing with disasters. Unlike Albaugh, who was the director, or Brown, Michael Brown, his number two guy, who used to be the lawyer for the Republican Party in Oklahoma, neither of whom have any experience dealing with disasters other than the disaster of the Republican Party. Some real disaster management folks within FEMA come up with a report suggesting that there are three, quote, likely most catastrophic disasters facing this country. What are those three? Number one, a terrorist strike in New York City. Yes, they named New York City. Number two, an earthquake in San Francisco. I suspect the citizens of San Francisco are looking around right now going, oh, this is what FEMA can do. And number three, a Category 4 or 5 hurricane striking New Orleans. FEMA predicted this. It was predicted that the levees would fail. What did George Bush do? He cut funding to the Army Corps of Engineers and sent them and many of them and much of their equipment over to Iraq to rebuild the bomb damage from when we blew up Iraq. So now they're over there in Iraq, along with a third of the Louisiana National Guard and almost all of the Louisiana National Guard's generators, most of their amphibious vehicles, and many of their Humvees. Just taking care of business, just getting shot at. Don't these guys know how to run a government just beautifully? 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. While soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave them the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with folks so windled hum. No one could hear the truth above the roar.
And welcome back, my friends.
And though your debating was a stinker, they bought it all, hook, line, and sinker. You razzle-dazzled home, and they gave you four more.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
I hear there's rumors on the internets. You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
Welcome back. That Bill Jacobs, BillJacobs.us, producing that music. Welcome back to our program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Tom Hartman Radio Program. Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Few things. One is the Canadians, you know, had planes ready to go Wednesday night, and they weren't allowed to fly down.
Really? Down to New Orleans?
Yeah, the Canadian TV said that they hadn't got permission from Homeland Security and such. They had a DART team, which is, you know, a specialized rescue team and so forth. And they weren't given permission to come down and help.
Where, Jeff, I haven't seen that in any of the media anywhere. Are you watching Canadian TV?
I'll send you a link on that.
Okay. I'm not saying I doubt it. I just think it's horrible. I mean, here we had Sue call from England, and she's talking about the UK offering us assistance. You're saying that you heard from Canada that Canada's offering us assistance. I'm not seeing this on CNN. I'm not seeing I'm not hearing this in the media. I'm not seeing it in the New York Times. It's like we live in a bubble.
I've heard TV news talk about foreign assistance being refused at this point.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm living in a bubble.
Yeah, and
not watching enough of it.
Also, as far as Cindy Sheehan going down there, that would. While I'm sure she'd be well-intentioned, I think that would be a bad idea because it would be too easy to call it politicalization of the thing. And she's got one task, she should stick with that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
The people who complain about anybody complaining about, you know, the incompetence here, calling it politicalization is kind of like a drunk driver complaining after he plowed into a crowd of people that we're talking about him being drunk.
Yeah. That's a good metaphor. Or a good analogy, really, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just the whole thing about every time, you know, that we've had a drunk administration who always just complains, well, you shouldn't talk about us being drunk.
Yeah, drunk with power. Thank you, Jeff.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Xavier in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Xavier.
Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, in regards to the Bush administration's handling of not just New Orleans situation, but just about every situation that requires tax funds to help people.
Yes.
I think what we need to do is think outside the box here. That old saying, render under Caesar what is Caesar's.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we were to just, like, you know, pay our taxes and let that go to the war machine and then just basically build another society next to it. Like what I've done is I've started a pirate radio station 10 years ago, and then there's your news station, your program. What we need to do is just create structures that are parallel to the old system and just let that one wither on the vine. I think people are, each time they make a mistake and we report it, the people are going to start getting wise to it.
Well, I got to respectfully disagree with you, Xavier. First of all, I think that, you know, there are a lot of ways that a whole lot more channels, frequencies can be opened up, particularly for low-power community FM, and should be. And I think it's a shame that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting lobbied against that, as well as all the big radio combines. But that's a whole other topic. We've invested 200 years, more than 200 years, in the infrastructures of the United States. And rather than letting these guys walk off with it, I think that we should fight for it. I think that we should be infiltrating and taking over.
I agree, but what I'm saying is that in the short term, like, you know, basically creating local communities that respond to things like this.
Oh, yeah, to the extent that we can. The extent that we can. But there's no way that New Orleans would ever have the resources in and of itself, or even the state of Louisiana, to deal with this kind of a crisis. And we just have to acknowledge that. And the same is true of New York City. The same is true of Miami. The same is true of San Francisco. The same is true of Portland, any big city. I mean, once you have millions of people at risk, there's no way a single state, and particularly the city itself, can deal with that kind of a crisis. It just can't be done. We've got to have the commons.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you understand the things I'm feeling today? The button's pushed, there's no running away. No one's safe with the world in a gray.
And welcome back, my friends. It is 33 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. If you go to the www.fema.gov website and click volunteer or make a contribution, well, that's interesting. They've changed it. Up until about an hour ago, there were only three organizations listed under donate cash. Now there are six. They've added the Humane Society of the United States, the UJA Federation of New York, and the United Jewish Communities. But the American Red Cross, America's Second Harvest, and Operation Blessing are at the top. Operation Blessing is an interesting organization with a fascinating history. I'll tell you about it in just a minute. First, our phone number, 866-889-8894. Doug in San Diego, California. Doug, you disagree with me.
Oh, yes, on many things, but the program probably won't go that long. But I just happened to notice you, your station from being home from work and catching it on Cox Cable News Network here. And I've been following the disaster in New Orleans, and I think the blame is not entirely just with Bush, although I agree with you that at the federal level there is a massive blame there, but it starts at the local level. The local level had to know that how many of their poor people and people on public assistance would be left behind and how to deal with them at that level when they were making plans. Obviously that was forgotten about. And then the people themselves with their behavior. There's no justification for what they're doing. And shooting at helicopters, shooting at rescue workers, trying to get in. And there's
Doug, you think I'm saying that there is?
No, but it makes you sound like you're apologizing for it.
I'm not. I don't. There is absolutely no justification for shooting at rescue workers, period.
Well, that's nice to hear.
So where do we disagree?
Well, you're blaming most of this on the federal level. These people here were subsistent on government. Therefore, mostly had public assistance from welfare, or they chose to stay behind. Some of them chose to stay behind because of looting. They wanted to loot.
So they stayed behind because they wanted to loot. So that
some
they're
of
going,
them did.
So that, now, let me just get this
let
straight.
Let me finish. Some of them stayed behind. They wanted to loot. That's obvious. And that's from the reporters on the ground, because I've been watching it, both on CNN and
so what are they going to do with this looted stuff?
That's a good question. They're not logical. They don't think like that. They just wanted to take it.
I see. Is that because they're black?
They commandeered a beer truck and stuffed all kinds of merchandise in a beer truck and tried to take it out of town. They was caught, and they showed them. Now, there's no excuse for that. And you can't say that Bush's problem. It's more of a local level not dealing with the fact that all these people on government assistance were going to get left behind because they didn't know what to do.
Doug, are you
with
old
them.
Enough to remember the war on poverty with Lyndon Johnson?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Then you remember the fact that Lyndon Johnson cut poverty in the United States in half in 4 years. I assume you remember that. And I assume if you're of my age anyway or close to it, that you recall that there was a time in the United States when people on public assistance were in deep trouble. I mean, there was just like widespread poverty. A lot of Doug has vanished. I'll finish the rant without him because it's a shame. I love it when people disagree with me, but what can I say? Anyhow, there was a time in this country when people on public assistance were in deep trouble and there was no way out. And Ben Franklin was right back in the 1760s. When in his autobiography, after he had visited England, he wrote about how a welfare state that doesn't provide people with an opportunity to move out of their social class into the next social class up, the next economic class up, dooms them to stay in that class forever. And that if you have government assistance and you're simply giving people a check every month, period, and that's all you do, that you're gonna have multi-generational poverty and you're gonna have multi-generational government dependence. Ben Franklin was right about that. And a lot of conservatives will tell you that, and up to that point, they're right. However, here's where they're wrong. What LBJ did in the 60s with the war on poverty was he provided not only an opportunity for people to move from poverty into some semblance of the lower end of the middle class economically, literally by giving them a check, but he also provided good education for their children. He provided good job training for those people who were available to work. And as a result of that, we have seen this explosion or this dramatic increase in the black middle class in America. And in the middle class in a lot of poverty-stricken areas in Appalachia and whatnot, of poor whites. Because the next generation had an education. You can solve poverty in one, two, maybe three generations at the most if you give people an opportunity to have a good, solid education and you provide them with economic opportunities so they can move out of that society of dependence. But then what happens in this country is we kind of go back and forth and back and forth. We're a little schizophrenic. So LBJ comes along and he does this, and over the course of about 10, 12 years, you see a middle class emerging in communities and neighborhoods that used to be just poverty-stricken. And you can see it in any city in America. And then the cons come along. And the Republicans take power, and they cut back on the programs for the schools, and they cut back on the programs for job training, and they cut back on the programs, the social safety net stuff. And so people simply revert back to saying, okay, give me the check. And then it gets really bizarre. Then Clinton comes along and says, okay, we're going to cut you off the check at the end of 4 or 5 years. And by the way, we're not going to offer those schools, and we're not going to improve the local schools. In fact, I can tell you, I have done in-service trainings in where I'm going in and teaching teachers about teaching in schools, in inner-city schools, in Atlanta, in Detroit, and in other cities around the United States. Those are the two major cities that I've worked in, a lot of smaller cities all across the United States. And I can tell you that we really have two separate school systems in the United States. And LBJ started moving us out of that. And everybody was all flipped out about it. Oh, you know, forced busing and everything else, integrating schools, how dare they? And it brought about a significant change. So what you're doing, Doug, I'm sorry, you're blaming the victims. It is absolutely real that, is that Doug again? Hey, okay, cool.
No.
Hey, Doug, you vanished. Anyway,
well,
it's absolutely
I thought I got cut
real.
Off.
Yeah, well, have you been hearing me?
Yeah, of course. I heard
okay.
Everything you said.
All right, so rebut it.
Well, I'm saying I'm not blaming the victims. The victims are actually victimizing themselves. They're preying on their own people. And
well,
Doug,
this is a very small number of people. In any community, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of income category, you are going to find thieves. Look at the people. I mean, you know, this just here. Listen to this, Doug.
Burn, baby, burn. That's a beautiful thing.
These are vandals. These are looters, Doug.
He steals money from California to the tune of about a million.
Can we rephrase that?
Okay. He arbitrages the California market to the tune of $1 million a day.
$1 million a day being looted out of California by Ken Lay.
How long does it take to get it back up?
Oh, it's not something you want to just be turning on and off every hour. Let's
put it
that way.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and shut her down?
So here we got, now these are real looters.
All the money back from you guys? All the money you guys stole from those poor grandmothers of California?
Yeah, Grandma Millie, man.
Yeah, now she wants her f***ing money back for all the power you charged right up, jammed right up her ass.
Yeah, so these are the real looters, Doug, and they were stealing like $1 million, $2 million a day. And you're concerned about some guy stealing a pair of tennis shoes?
No, I'm not concerned about them stealing a pair of tennis shoes. I'm concerned about them wiping out that whole arms, that whole Walmart, the guns that they stole.
Yeah?
That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about them shooting them at the rescue.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. And if the Bush administration had gotten there, they knew that this thing was going to happen, right? A week ago today, everybody was saying this is going to happen. And if they had had the National Guard in there and they had maintained order, those people wouldn't have robbed those stores and they wouldn't have those guns and they wouldn't be shooting at those helicopters. It's the exact same thing that happened in Iraq. They planned for the invasion. They didn't plan for the occupation. These guys don't know how to run a government. They don't know how to run a country. They don't know how to run a state. They don't know how to run a city. They don't know how to run FEMA. They don't know how to run anything except a war. They know how to punish. George Bush is gleeful. He laughs about capital punishment, you know, putting to death Carla Faye Tucker. Oh, save me, Governor Bush, please save me. You know, they know how to punish. They don't know how to do anything that is useful, how to run things. If they had been there, you would not have these looters. I'm telling you, in any society, regardless of income, regardless of race, if you give people an opportunity to steal from you, there's always going to be a small percentage who will. Those people who I was just playing the clips to you of white people, rich white people who were stealing from you and me, and poor black people in Louisiana. If the society starts to break down, as it did with Enron when Republicans said, hey, let's deregulate the power industry, or as it did in New Orleans when the Republicans said, oh, we're not going to go in there the day of the hurricane or the day after the hurricane and restore order, society's going to break down and you're going to have looting.
And you're forgetting one important thing.
Yeah?
And that is, did you know that New Orleans was on the FBI's top list for corrupt cities in the United States for how many years in a row?
I have no idea, but what does that have to do with anything?
With the corruption that's staying at the local level. So where's the money? Where's the planning? So it started to look. You want to blame everything
again?
On
you want to blame this on? You want to blame the victims, Doug? There is no way any city in America, whether they're corrupt or not, There's no way any city in America can deal with the entire city being in 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 feet of water in a Category 4 hurricane.
And I agree with you. But I went through a fire here in Jamul, which is where I live, east of San Diego, and I had to evacuate my house twice during the fire, and I had to spend the night out in a parking lot, pitch black, with other residents of the area in a parking lot of a shopping center, and nobody touched anybody, nobody bothered anybody, they just left each other alone.
You didn't have an entire city on fire, Doug.
No, mine didn't have a entire city on fire. But the whole area was on fire, and it was a catastrophe. You look back, this was just a couple years ago. And we, in San Diego, there was no incidence of this stuff that could have happened, but that didn't happen.
And it would have if it had been citywide. I have relatives who lived through the Great Chicago Fire, and Chicago went to hell when that fire happened because order, law and order broke down. That's the very simple thing. When law and order breaks down, then you've got people who are taking opportunity, whether it's Enron, when law and order broke down at a federal level, at a national level, and MCI, WorldCom, and all this other stuff, or whether it's in New Orleans. And the responsibility to maintain law and order in the face of a true catastrophic natural disaster, and this is something that's on the order of the Chicago Fire and the San Francisco earthquake in 1906, the responsibility to take to maintain civil order is not with the local community because they were knocked out. They lost their communications ability. Even today, the New Orleans Police Department can't talk to themselves. It's with the federal government. That's why we have FEMA. Got a response, Doug?
No, well, actually, you know, I'm agreeing with you. A lot of stuff you make sense. And I'm agreeing with you. A lot of issues with you make sense, but except with the... You get too stuck on the bush bashing.
Okay.
And
now,
if you weren't making the bush bashing too much, let me just
toss you a bone. Bill Clinton sold this country out when he signed NAFTA and GATT. He absolutely sold us down the river. It was one of the most horrible things that has been done by any president in the last 50 years. Bill Clinton did that, and then he put the nail in the coffin by signing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Now, I'm an equal opportunity basher.
But let me tell you, I agree with you on one thing.
Yes, sir.
And that's an impeachment of Bush. But the impeachment of Bush is on not the same reasons of you.
Yeah, I want Bush impeached
because of his collaboration with Vicente Fox to allow the invasion of Mexico to continue.
Yeah,
not to stop the invasion. Okay. When I hear the Democrats
I agree
come
with
up
you.
And say stop that invasion from Mexico, then they're going to be on the right side.
I think you've got Democrats saying that right now. What's really going on? You want to stop the invasion of people from Mexico. I mean, what we have right now is we've got about 10% of the population of Mexico in the United States living and working illegally, and they're doing it because there are people in the United States who will hire them. The border between the United States and Mexico was far more porous back in the 1960s when you and I were kids, and yet there weren't thousands, millions of Mexicans pouring across that border. Why? Because 25% of America's labor force in the 1960s and the 1970s, right up until 1980 when Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor, 25% of America's labor force was unionized. And the unions were the first barrier of defense against illegals getting into the workforce. You strip away that layer of defense, and all you've got is corporations who are interested in nothing more than the bottom line. They don't care about civil society. They don't care about your job or mine. In fact, they rather like the fact that there are illegals here because it drives down the cost of labor by increasing the supply of it.
Hey, I concur with you 100% on that point, but what's going to happen now? What's going to happen? Are they going to take advantage? Is the invasion from Mexico going to take advantage now on our borders?
Well, that's what Bush wants to do. He wants to decriminalize all these guys. He wants to make them braceros. He wants to make them all legal.
No, do you advocate putting the National Guard in California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas? Put the National Guard on the border right now. How can we take care of our people?
That would be the equivalent of putting a Band-Aid on cancer. Here's my suggestion, Doug. Make it a crime that a CEO can go to jail for to hire an illegal alien. The day after you do that, there will be 10 million people who are illegally in the United States right now standing at the border with Mexico trying to get back into Mexico because they can't get employment here. The only reason that those folks are in this country is because we are hiring them.
Yeah, I concur. Hey, I got to go. I got to give you props on your show. I try to listen to Air America, but it's unwatchable and unlistenable.
Okay.
And
Doug,
so I think John Soros of MoveOn.org, they should back you instead of Air America.
Okay. Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. Holy cow. People, I've got to find people who will just consistently disagree with me. People who disagree with me and then end up agreeing with me. That's no fun. But, well, you know, it made for a good conversation. Anyhow, and a lot of topics that we touched on. We have an absolute disaster going on down in New Orleans right now. They need your help. There are a couple of good organizations. Operation Blessing is not one of them, in my opinion. But the American Red Cross is certainly a good organization. Yes, they have cleaned up their act since the scandals of a decade ago when Bob Dole's wife was involved. I can't... That's here, Republic bashing again, Republican bashing. And also, MoveOn.org has put together a website for matching homes with refugees, HurricaneHousing.org. Check that out, too, if you really want to get involved. 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I want to hear it. I don't have to fear.
With this boarding procedure down here, we suddenly, NOPD is off the scene, or very limited. State police, it's going to be a volatile situation as we put these people through the ramp there, going through the Hyatt, and then eventually onto the bus. It's almost overwhelming us, and we need some reinforcement. At least we need the law enforcement organizations to at least stick with us and not go down in numbers. I haven't even found my state police LNO when they came this afternoon and said they were swapping them out, and they were all here in force, and all of a sudden everybody disappeared. Say, is there anything y'all can do from y'all then to call these agencies at a higher level and get some emphasis down here?
This off a New Orleans police scanner.
This is Pat, I'll jump on it right now. I know where both parties are. I mean, right now, and I'll walk them both over and get with it.
Roger, I really need that state police LNO here. I mean, if he's here, I haven't found him. He hasn't come here. And I think you got the you understand the gravity of what's happening here.
You got a bunch of guys who are high and dry.
Let me know, I can do the job.
Thanks, out. Eagle 2 Alpha, Eagle 6, over.
Yeah, and it continues on. Apparently, some tough people deserting their jobs.
Tiger 5, Pelican Bay, stand by. 3 Alpha's on the phone call.
Yeah. Anyhow, we'll come back to that later, but or next week. But some real problems in New Orleans. Police actually leaving their jobs, apparently not wanting to get involved in shoot to kill orders. Jesse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hi. This crisis, have you ever seen such cut-and-dry beliefs displayed between the Republicans and Democrats? Like, take, for example, Haley, Republican Governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour. I mean, from the beginning, he was boasting about how he was mercilessly...
Oop, we have another few seconds. You can wrap it up, Jesse.
He's mercilessly going after the looters.
Yeah.
And,
versus
you know,
the mayor of New Orleans.
Oh, absolutely.
Mr. Nagin.
He's a real person. It's
yeah.
just like...
No, it's absolutely black and white. Not in the racial sense, but in the metaphorical sense.
Cut and dry, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last time I saw it like this was the tail end of the Vietnam War, frankly. You know,
it really displays
that
the
kind of polarization. Yeah.
Yeah, the Republicans are concerned about the looters. Who cares about the... Everybody lost something.
Yeah.
So the stores lost something. Don't worry.
Right.
Don't get it back in
that's
playoffs.
Right. That's right. We got to get people out and get them out safe. And, you know, Nixon divided us in the 70s, and now we got Bush. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.